Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Here we go, guys. Episode 17 of the C-Squared Podcast, special edition, special Christmas edition, or whatever holidays you are celebrating right now. Fabi, great to see you once again. We're not in the same place. We don't have any guests, but here we go. What do we have to discuss about this week? Actually, let's start with this. First of all, tell us where you are and what have you been doing for the past couple of weeks? I haven't seen you in a week and a half or something like that.
Yeah, I went to Spain. I think I tweeted about it that I'm going to Spain. And it's just a stopover. My family, my parents are still here. So I'm visiting them before going to Kazakhstan for the World in Rapid and Blitz Championships. And been here for a few days, just dealing with some of the jet lag. You know how it is.
Yep. How is that going, actually? Do you usually have a more difficult time when you come to the United States or when you go to Europe?
Coming back is easier, I've noticed.
Coming back to the U.S., you mean?
Yeah. I think east to west is generally easier. Is that correct?
I think so. East to west, yeah.
These last few days have been a bit unproductive, you know. I had a weird sleep schedule, been sleeping throughout the afternoon, and I haven't adjusted so perfectly. I usually adjust a little bit better. Like last night, I stayed up till like 6 a.m. it hasn't been so ideal, but I think I'll start to adjust pretty quickly. Although there's still a time difference. I mean, it's, I don't know what it is, 2 or 3 hours.
Between Spain and Kazakhstan?
I would guess 3 hours. That would be my guess.
Yeah, I think.
Or could it be more than that?
I think it's definitely three or more, because I think between Spain and Romania, I think it's a couple of hours. And I think we're more west compared to Kazakhstan, pretty obvious.
Wait, no. Between Spain and Romania, but must be an hour, right?
Just one?
Must be, right?
I was pretty sure that it's that is two, but you might be right. It might be just 1 hour. Yeah, I think you're right. It's just 1 hour. That's one thing that I'm...
Yeah, I think so.
That's one thing that I'm having huge difficulties actually adjusting. And it only happened in recent years. Back when I first started college and I first moved to the United States, I was actually not having any issues coming back and getting back on normal schedule in like a matter of 1 or 2 days max. But nowadays I go on for like the whole duration of the vacation and I still cannot adjust. Like I still go to sleep at like 6 a.m. in the morning or like 4 or 6 a.m. in the morning and wake up after midday. So yeah, very, very difficult. Always much nicer to come back to the U.S. because then you actually feel productive, right?
I think also the age definitely plays a part. It's just easier to adapt to everything when you're, you know, in your late teenage years. I remember when I was starting to play very strong tournaments in my, I guess I was like 19, 20, and I would go to sleep at 4 a.m. I would wake up at 8 and I would go and play a game. And I can't really imagine doing that now. Now it seems very important to get sleep or you don't really perform very well. While when you're 20, 21, 22, whatever it is, you can go without sleep and still perform very well or recover from, let's say, alcohol, which now is like I more or less stopped drinking at some point because recovery from alcohol just got rather difficult.
We're getting old, my friend. So, we're getting old. I mean, we're
I wouldn't go that far yet, but getting older for sure.
We're past 30.
You start to notice at least some small things.
Yeah. No, that's actually a very good point that you made, though, with the alcohol. I more or less stopped drinking as much as possible. Socially, obviously, I still occasionally get a beer or two. But I definitely don't go as far as, losing control, getting drunk, things of that nature, because I know I'm just going to be a complete vegetable,
I think that beer is one of the safer choices, as long as you're not, having, 2 6-packs.
But I used
to have a beer to it, because it also hydrates you, I think, compared to other types of alcohol.
I'm not sure about that.
If you're drinking straight vodka, you're going to get very dehydrated as well, which is part of the big issue with hangovers, right?
Yeah. Dehydration is a big one for sure. At least this is what I used to being told. Is that beer also during the summer months it feels like you're getting hydrated, but you're actually getting dehydrated whenever you're drinking beer. So, okay, but those were, problems of the past for sure. Now let's talk about the trip to LA. I think this is where we kind of left it off. For me, it felt quite productive. We shot a lot of content, we spoke with a lot of interesting people, and we had a pretty fun event, I have to say. Now, talk to me about the sentiment afterwards, and then talk to me about what impressed you the most in terms of the participants in the chess boxing
LA
event.
Was a fun trip. it was a bit of a hectic trip. We came in, I forget which day it was exactly.
Thursday.
We came into LAX and we got a rental car, and that, it was a whole process. It was rather difficult to get to the rental car place because LA is a crazy city, especially with a lot of traffic, and it's not very accessible. It's difficult to get around. And then after that, we basically immediately drove over to the house that Alexandra and Andrea and that where they live and where Lawrence was temporarily staying during his LA trip, and we saw all of them. It was very fun that first night.
But
that's
it was
when we spoke
so
to Lawrence.
Tiring.
That's when we spoke to the Botez sisters. I enjoyed both of those talks. It's of course in hindsight. Some of it looks a bit silly,
It looks very silly. We were so wrong. We were so wrong. Yeah.
We were completely off on everything. The main thing was that what Lawrence said, what Aman also, I think, partially said, and what we thought as well, was it will probably come down to the chess. We didn't expect a knockout, I don't think. We had the feeling that both of them don't have the technique for a knockout, but we thought that if anyone is going to win in the boxing, it would be Lawrence.
Absolutely. I remember
big shots landed for both fighters. So oh my God, the first knockout of the match. Bofago giving the standing eight count for Lawrence Trent. Aman just piped as hell in his corner.
I remember clearly saying that, thinking that it's what Lawrence very clearly thought as well. I think you also shared that sentiment.
I think you took
Aman,
Lawrence, right?
Of course. What's that?
You took Lawrence, right?
I took Lawrence, but we didn't make a bet on it.
As a prediction. We did not make a bet on it. And by the way, I do not owe you $50.
I was going to say, I'm not trying to collect on that.
Andrea and Dina, it resulted in a tie.
Yeah. We can call that one a wash because they both won. I mean, it was a weird ending, but I guess fair enough.
Reminds me of the time when you, Magnus, and Levon won the Singfield Cup.
Well, I think we explained that story once, but that was a funny end to a tournament.
Yeah.
But it was very interesting. I enjoyed talking to Alexandra and Andrea. It was the first time I had ever met Andrea, even though, of course, I knew about her in the chess world. She's super famous and as a content creator. but it was the first time we'd ever met. Alexandra I'd met, you know, multiple times over the years. It was good to see her again. It was good to see Lawrence again. I hadn't seen him for I think 3 years or so. And yeah, the fights were super interesting. I enjoyed watching them. The best one was obviously, I think most people would agree with this, at least most people in the chess world, that D9 on Andrea chess boxing, that was the best fight of the night, the most interesting one content wise. The only one I think where you had a full game of chess and a full boxing bout.
Yes, absolutely. No, that was the closest one, the most competitive one for sure. And
well, I don't know if I'd say closest, although I guess
it is. It was. No, it was super close from a chess boxing perspective, right? And we were sort of hinting towards the fact that Dina is much stronger in chess aspect, right? And it was pretty obvious from the beginning. Andrea got her opening in, but after that, in the middle game, she very quickly got outplayed. But in the boxing, I mean, Andrea was vicious, man. I mean, she was throwing those punches with intent for sure.
Looking for a big punch.
Dina, nice and busy with a jab.
Oh!
Big overhand right.
Dina lands.
Back in for the hooks.
Yeah, I think we called that one pretty accurately.
Yeah.
That it would be close. That Dina was a clear chess favorite. I mean, she's a 2,300 plus player. She played in the last Olympiad for Israel, I think, on the first board.
Yeah.
2,350, I think, more
she's
or less.
She's good. Yeah.
So very good player. Andrea is a good player, but maybe her strength is around 1,900. It's hard for me to like accurately judge strengths. I don't know her rating exactly, but the gap in rating is like 400 plus points.
Yeah.
So, but boxing was amazing. I mean, Andrea had prepared really well. I think Dina was not too impressive in the boxing, but Andrea was super impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the previous fight, actually, Aman impressed everybody and surprised all of us, shocked us, including Lawrence. I think Lawrence did not expect that, and he was talking about it. He looked good, I have to say. When we first saw Lawrence, he definitely looked in shape. He was looking pretty fast, quick with his hands. He was practicing shadow boxing all the time, and he was showing us videos, and Andrea and Alexandra were showing us videos and talking about how he shadow boxes all the time. So he definitely was zoned in the match. And then Aman was like super soft-spoken. He spoke with us as well, but he told us, he gave us an Easter egg. He said, you might be surprised by what's going to happen in the boxing realm. And that's exactly what happened. Yeah.
I don't think he could have anticipated that he would knock Lawrence out, that he knocked him down basically twice. First time Lawrence got up, the second time Lawrence was wobbly and it was declared a TKO. But I don't think Aman could have predicted that. Like, he might have thought he has a fair shot in the boxing, but to think that as an amateur boxer, like more or less coming to boxing for the first time a few months ago, that he would be able to land punches that would floor Lawrence.
Yeah.
Was surprising, probably, I mean, to all of us for sure, probably also to him. But it was very impressive. I think this demonstrates the difference between theory and practice. I mean, in theory, Lawrence was as prepared as a new boxer could be. You know, he had been training. He lost a lot of weight. He was probably had good cardio, good stamina, which of course didn't actually matter because they didn't get deep into the fight enough that stamina would matter. But yeah, once he started getting hit, he couldn't recover. Like the first punch, he was just instantly completely wobbly. You know, you just saw like he spun around the first punch.
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't prepared for it. While Aman seemed prepared for the punches. Like he was getting clipped a few times early on. If you look at like the first like 10 seconds of the fight, Lawrence is getting a few more
jabs. He was jabbing him.
On Aman, yeah. And then it all fell apart once Aman got like a really big big punch in.
It felt like there was actually a difference in strength between the two of them, which
maybe Amon's punches had more power.
At least visually, it felt that way. And obviously, due to the result, obviously, it's or maybe Amon is just more used to getting punched in the face, which sounds a bit strange because Lawrence was saying that he was training quite frequently at his gym and he was touting his sparring partners and saying that they're old school, they hit you pretty hard and they don't cut you any slack. But still, it felt like Amon had the punching power, which is
obviously Lawrence said, which was, he said, like, once you get used to getting hit in the face, that that's the most important thing. And he said that once you start to get used to getting hit in the face, that the first few times it's very surprising, but then you get adjusted to it, and it's much more unpleasant to get hit in the body.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Like a strong body shot.
Yeah.
But as it turned out, once he was getting hit in the face, like, he just wasn't really prepared for it.
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk all we want, but the fight proves it, right? That he really wasn't prepared for it.
Absolutely, no. The result speaks for itself, as they say. Now, would you ever try it? I think some people were trying to kind of coax you in and get you going for some fights. Would you ever try it?
Well, so I don't know what, if any of the fighters got paid, or if they were just doing it for fun or for publicity. Although I don't imagine that. Let's say Andrea needs publicity. She was probably just doing it for fun. I don't know if they're even allowed to pay money for these fights.
Yeah, we can only speculate.
I would
in that regard
only do it for like a significant amount of money. I'll just be like very honest with this. I have no real interest in chess boxing besides as a spectator. Like, I have no interest in doing it, but. As a challenge, if there was something on the line, then sure, I'd consider it. And I would probably take it very seriously because I wouldn't want to get hurt.
Yeah. I think that's probably very important for chess players in general. Yeah. Not getting hit in the head too many times. And we saw how damaging those hits can actually be, right? We did not expect any of them to get knocked out yet. Well, Lawrence got knocked out. And then Dina was very close to getting knocked out. So,
well, I mean, she was getting close to maybe getting TKO'd, or TKO'd, she should have been.
Yes, I don't think
Andrea had enough power in her punches to actually knock Dina out. Like, she was landing hits.
She was
on
wobbly.
Her.
She was wobbly.
Yeah, but they didn't seem like powerful. Like, she was very clearly the aggressor.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel like there was much power, especially once they started to get tired in the punches. Yeah. Like, then it was more that she was just. She was all over her, but not in a way that I felt she would get injured.
Yeah.
Because at some point, like, Dina just put down her defenses completely.
Yeah.
She was not. She didn't have her hands up. She wasn't even moving at some point.
Like, I think that actually came quite quickly, yeah? I think in the first round, after like 30 seconds, 1 minute max of actually trying to throw punches, she kind of shelled up. She shelled up and she just stayed like that for the remainder of the match, pretty much.
Yeah, she at some point she just put her hands up and she didn't move forward. She didn't move backwards. She just stayed in position.
Yeah.
But yeah, it made sense in a way that she's not trying in the boxing to win because she just wants to survive. Because the chess, she will almost certainly win, which is what happened.
Yep.
Actually, I thought that the chess, the way that she approached the game, because you can. When you're trying to win a game quickly, it's different than trying to win a game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I'm playing a 1700 or an 1800 or 2000, I can win the game very slowly and accurately. But she had the time element, and the way she approached it was very good, where she at some point she just started sacking. Like she sacked C7, she just went for the mate. She very quickly understood that she can mate her opponent, but she has to act very quickly, even though she had a good position with other means as well, and also by playing very quickly on the clock. So she recognized the time element. That's why she ended up being declared the winner, because actually she missed mate in one, right? She should have won the
she did
the knight whole chess boxing.
Yep.
Yeah, knight takes f2.
Thing she can do is give checks. She has to stall. If she's smart, she's going to stall the clock out. Andrea cannot make any move.
She has to do a force check with her bishop.
Oh, that was smart. She took the pawn,
okay,
so the knight...
sacrificed.
Wait, but Dina missed mate in
one. There's a check.
Chess boxing contest was hers without any sort of controversy.
Yeah.
That's the moment when she should have slowed down for a second, because then she would have recognized the main one. But yeah, I really enjoyed that fight. I thought that was a really good fight.
It was.
The other ones, some were kind of silly, like the one where they were kind of semi-competent at boxing, but they couldn't play chess whatsoever.
I forget the players.
But you know what I mean, right?
That was pretty bad, yeah. By the jiu-jitsu black belt, who was actually
decent. That one too, but like later on when the guy was literally, they didn't make it out of the opening.
Yeah. Myth, I think, against the guy with the red hair.
Trillies.
Yeah.
Ability of his chess play.
Yep.
And he...
Oh, wow. Very clearly what we are about to...
Yeah. The content creators were definitely quite funny. Obviously, you would need... I would say for this to be marketable, you would need people that are pretty proficient in chess and maybe less proficient in boxing, but definitely they should know some chess. And I might be biased, obviously, because I'm a chess player, but that's the way
I
see it.
I feel the same. I'm biased. I would like to see chess players who are evenly matched, like Dean Andrea are, maybe not even in both ways, but the mix of it is competitive. Yeah. Or these guys, these streamers have to take the chess very seriously, at least. Like, there was one guy, Toph, I think?
Toph, yeah.
Who clearly took the chess seriously. Like, he was playing very well. He sacked bishop on b7. It was a temporary sacrifice to win the pawn. He was regaining the bishop. Like, the chess was good. The only problem for him was that
he got knocked out.
Last in boxing, right?
Yeah. That was definitely a fun event. I think everybody had a lot of fun and everybody would probably do it again. And I hope they do it again. But it was definitely...
Well, Lawrence has said that he wants to get back in the ring.
He's going to fight, I think, once again in February. But it's not going to be a North American gala. I think it's going to be a European gala.
Yeah.
In France it'll be or something like
probably
that.
Probably very... not as much publicized or...
Not even close.
Hundreds of thousands of people as this one was.
Not even close.
But still, it'll be interesting to see him get back in the ring. Hopefully he can recover from what, well, we know was a great disappointment to him.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, that was a fun trip, but definitely a very tiring one. Came in on Thursday, worked the whole Thursday, and then immediately after the fights, we actually didn't party at all. Which is a little bit weird, right? Because you go to LA, there is obviously going to be all these parties around this event, but we just didn't party a single night. So I think that was the right decision. I was actually thinking about it at 5 a.m. because we had to wake up at like 5 a.m. in the morning to catch the Monday morning flight. And I was thinking, yeah, I kind of wanted to go out, but it actually made absolutely no sense because I would have been dead.
I didn't relish the idea of going to sleep in the early hours of the morning, getting like 2 hours of sleep and then going in for a trip.
Yeah.
I didn't regret not really going out and celebrating or partying too much because I think that we did do some very interesting stuff there. Not all the interviews that we did were published yet. Obviously, the ones with Lawrence, with Amon, and with Alexandra and Andrea were published, but we still have one more, which is in the pipeline.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be an exciting one. I don't know if we should say who the guest is.
It's a big one, yeah, for sure. I mean, we spoke with Levy, and Levy Rosman, Gotham Chess, however you want to call him, or however you know him. But yeah, that's definitely going to be an interesting one. And I think it was one of the better ones we had also. The conversation definitely flew nicely. We covered a lot of subjects. And
yeah, it was one of the most enjoyable ones that, from my point of view, that we filmed.
Yeah. And he's like, good. I mean, he's a professional.
All been enjoyable. Yeah, they've all been enjoyable. But yeah, I got more like personally invested in the conversation. While sometimes it's just, you just hear very interesting things, right?
Yeah.
From people. But this was more of like a back and forth, which I enjoyed.
I think so too. Yeah. No, that was fun. And then we got back on Monday. You were actually moving that day also. You were really into some sort of a transition period. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I spent, like, after I came back, and I had this match against Magnus, which obviously was a disaster. And I was also moving at the same time. And, like, after the match against Magnus, I spent the rest of the day moving my stuff. Well, actually, I had already, like, moved out. I was in between two places. I had rented the new place, and I already moved some of my furniture in there before L.A. But the other place, I still needed to get rid of everything that, you know, all the like tiny things, right? And my lease hadn't ended there yet, so I had to clear out the apartment. I had to clean up and get rid of a lot of stuff and also decide which stuff I want to keep. So like 3 days were just nonstop, like eight hours a day.
Yeah. And that's because you actually had to fly to Europe on like Thursday or something like that. Right.
Yeah. Also, my lease was ending. I managed to move everything out before the lease ended. So I even like, vacated before, which was my goal, because I didn't want to leave everything completely last minute.
Yeah.
But yeah, at the end, it was just a strange feeling because I like saw this place which, for years, I had known with like all my furniture and all my stuff, and completely empty, basically like a brand new apartment. Except also quite, there's like bits of broken glass everywhere and stuff.
Yeah.
You know how it is when you move. And but yeah, it was very, very satisfying when I was finally done with the whole thing.
It was satisfying. It's interesting. Like, interesting.
Yeah, moving is a very big annoyance, I would have to say.
Did you feel any nostalgic feelings watching the empty apartment, former apartment? I mean, I'm sure a lot of memories in it. And
you're moving to a new place? Really, no. No, to me it was sort of a place that I came back to in between tournaments. And I never really grew attached to it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why I was quite satisfied also that I had moved out and to a place which I like more.
That's good. Yeah. Well, you mentioned the match against Magnus. I'm sure you don't want to talk too much about it. That was just a complete disaster. But yeah, I mean, if you want, talk to us a little bit about it. Because I'm sure a lot of people want to know what happened there.
Well, it was a disaster. I mean, it didn't go well from any point of view, but it got progressively worse as it went on.
Was it tilt?
I think it was a combination of things. I mean, I don't try to make excuses.
Of course not.
Yeah. But I was woefully prepared for this match I didn't really have any time. I hadn't looked at chess in weeks, to be honest. I came into it basically wondering, like almost, I don't know how the pieces move, which sounds kind of like the last thing I had done chess-wise was my match against Eric Gaisi. And then it was the podcast LA and moving out, and I didn't have like a free moment in any day that I could look at chess.
Yeah.
And opening-wise, I didn't really think that there would be much to prepare for because Magnus is, generally speaking, you know, he likes to jump around opening wise everywhere, and I was happy to do the same. I don't think the openings went badly necessarily, but I was just not in real shape to play, and Maybe against some people you can get away with that. Against Magnus, certainly not. And then at some point it was just tilt. It just
It became tilt.
Of course,
sure.
the match was over. Like halfway through the 3-minute segment, you know, it was pretty clear. I'm not going to be making up a 6-point deficit or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Halfway through, once the 3-minute segment ended, I think it was even more than an 8-point deficit, something like that. Completely impossible to recover from.
Yeah.
And in the bullet, it was just, I was just making moves, not really looking at them. I would get good positions. Sometimes I would usually, because Magnus has this quality, which is that he is probably the best defender in down to seconds.
That's what I felt the difference was made in the last few seconds. Like, no matter what the position was looking like, he was able to out scramble you pretty much.
Yeah, okay. I wouldn't say that's the only difference. Like, I have to be objective, and he did.
But that felt like the biggest one. Like, in terms of like number of games where things changed.
Yeah, if we want to point to like the reason why it was such an overwhelming margin.
Yeah.
Then many games in the last few seconds. Like a few examples. Like in the 1 minute, I was at some point just up a clear piece in one of the games.
With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood. Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC. Member SIPC, a registered broker-dealer.
But somehow it was a position where I don't have counterplay against his king. And he has an h-pawn, which is very, very slowly moving down the board. It's clearly winning for black, but yeah, I just couldn't like find a plan with seconds, while his moves seemed to always have purpose. There was another one where it was almost certainly a draw. I was even felt like I was better. I had a passed h-pawn, knight and bishop. He had a passed a-pawn, knight and bishop. It's very clear if I bring my king to the queen side, we just make a draw. But I had this like hope, which wasn't based on calculation. I was just like hoping that some sort of miracle will appear, that my h-pawn will force its way through. When I thought about it later, I realized, well, there's no mechanism that I can force it through. I had knight on f6, bishop on f5, pawn on h6, he has king on f8.
Yeah.
And like, how do I get this pawn through? And so I was just kind of making like some meaningless moves, hoping that at some point the inspiration just comes to me, like by magic. And of course, his plan is very clear. He just pushes his a-pawn down the board, and I have to do something about it. I didn't, and I ended up losing the game. And that was a significant one, because I was in the 5-minute, I think, in a game where like it was still, I think, a 2-point deficit at that point, which is, you know, early on in the match.
It's not like insurmountable, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Magnus at some point had 4 points deficit against Hikaru, right? These are kind of normal swings that you could have. But those types of games just kept running away from me. Like, basically any advantage I had, I would not win. There was another one. I just couldn't believe that I didn't win this game. It was early on. I was down 2 points, but I think it was the fourth game or fifth game. And I had two bishops against two knights. And he was down material. And then he just starts sacking all his pawns. He gets his rooks on the second rank. I'm up 3 pawns.
I remember that one. That was a big one.
I feel like I played it badly. I didn't check the game after, but I don't feel like I played this game badly at all.
The one that ended in a draw, yeah?
Yeah, and it's just remarkable that he has enough. Even a rook endgame, he's just down 3 pawns, but I like slowly lose all my pawns.
Yeah, I remember the game.
And then, yeah, I was like kind of very upset when I didn't win this. I was like, I was up so much time too. I was up a minute and a half on the clock. So yeah, it was just any advantage I had, I would either slip or sometimes I would lose. Any advantage he has, he wins. Like I remember another one. It's just completely dead drawn position. I have dark square bishop and pawns all on dark squares. H6, G7, F6, E5, C5. All I need to do is not allow his one trick, which is to play G5. That's it.
If it gets any way in, black will be Black will be losing if this bishop can somehow get it. Oh, and I just Bingo. Thinking of any way.
Bishop
look at
takes g5. Danny, the idea is hg bishop takes g5. Holy smokes, my brain is exploding. Fg f6.
With the bishops, the bishop endgame. Yeah.
Yeah. I just need my bishop on anywhere where it can get back. Like if it's on d6, g5, I just take because my bishop can come back to f8.
Yeah.
But instead my bishop's on b8 and he plays g5 and he breaks my structure. Otherwise it's a completely dead drawn fortress, nothing to do.
Yeah.
And I lose that game. So it just these things kept happening again and again. And
yeah, once you get hit a couple of times with those type of situations, the tilt settles in, and then it's a completely different ball game. You start making wrong decisions. You start not seeing things or not considering things that you would normally consider. It's a completely different feeling. You're sinking. Yeah.
It was a classic example of I was in poor shape. Magnus was in good shape. I think he was having a good day. I mean, even his bad days are pretty good, right? He doesn't ever play like terrible chess. He always keeps consistency. But I think he was also having a good day by his standards.
Yeah, he was. He was.
And
for sure.
The weaker I got, the stronger he got. It was one of those cases where he just the confidence and the momentum helped him even more. And at some point he was just playing like extremely, extremely good chess. I mean, by any standards, like very, very strong chess.
Yeah.
And I was not. So that's that he was going to win the match at some point was clear, but that explains why he won it by whatever. I don't even remember the final score, but like, you know, a 20 point. Yeah. I don't even know if I'm exaggerating, a 20 point margin, something like that. Which is like the most devastating loss in terms of points that I've ever had. Like, I mean, I remember I once lost a match against Levon, which was also by a terrible margin, but not by this margin. So yeah, it was felt pretty disgusting at the end.
Yeah, of course. Did you see the Naka versus Magnus match?
Yeah, I watched it. Mm-hmm.
How did you interpret that? Did you expect Naka to take him down?
No. I mean, like Hikaru in the 5-minute portion was like godlike. I mean, the quality was
so good.
So high.
He was, yeah.
Incredibly high. I still didn't think it would be an easy match, but at some point it really felt like Magnus was also tilting, missing things. Like, okay, bishop c7. He smiled after that one. Like it was very silly, of course.
In Catalan, yeah, when he just yeah.
But then he started to really like pick up momentum. I think you could tell that he was starting to feel it, especially in the 1 minute. But yeah, it still wasn't enough. Like once it got back to equal, I have to say I really thought that Hikaru wouldn't like find the strength in the last few games to win the match. And it ended in a funny way, like a little bit of an unsatisfying way, because, you know, you want to see it go down to the wire, and it kind of did, but it was like he was saved by the bell in a way. I mean, not entirely, because he was up a point anyway. Like Magnus would still have to win a game if the next game started.
Yeah.
But
and Hikaru would have had white.
Yeah. That he ran out the clock. Actually, it showed that his strategy. Like, you know, you sometimes see people drawing, playing out these like drawn endings, right? To milk a minute off the clock or whatever. And my thought is always, well, this could be good. It could also backfire, right? You never know. Like you might need the match time for yourself, but it ended up being that all those minutes that he took off the match clock early on, like in that, Pyrrhic game, the well-known, perpetual theoretical draw. Where he like sat it out for 3 minutes.
Yeah.
That this strategy was completely correct. It ended up winning him the match. Even though to Hikaru's credit, I think even if the match had gone on, probably he would have not lost the final game and probably he would have won the match. But it would have been more satisfying to see it that way, right?
Yeah. I saw mixed reviews about this strategy. I think Levon famously posted on Twitter that he does not like this idea of milking every single second off the clock. And it feels, I don't think if he used the word dirty, but I feel that he doesn't believe this is in the spirit of the game. At the same time, I sort of like it. I sort of feel like this is part of the game. This is part of this specific format, because obviously we play so many formats, but this specific format, I feel this should be a part of it. I don't think there's any reasons to include any sort of new stalling rules or anything of that nature. I think it adds to the drama. What do you think?
Well, okay. First of all, I don't think we can criticize any of the players who use this rule, because they're playing by the rules of the match, and basically chess players should play with the aim of winning, mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. long as they're playing fairly, and this is in the rules, it's fair.
Yeah.
So Hikaru or whoever it is that's using this, and I think I've also seen Magnus do this.
It's not only Hikaru.
It's not just Hikaru. So it's many people have used this strategy. I've seen Wesley do this, right? It's normal. Like, this is just how you play to win, so it's correct. Now, when I think of it, I don't like to see it because it takes the intrigue out of the match a little bit, in my opinion. Like, it feels like an anti-climax. So that's a question on chess.com. Do you want to change the rules because maybe they're not as spectator-friendly as getting that final game, right? Everyone wanted to see that final game where Magnus has to win. That would be yeah. the most climactic thing.
Yeah.
So this is on chess.com. Is there a way to do this? I don't think that you can put an anti-stalling rule because how would you do that? Like, this would have to be done on a case-by-case basis, and it would probably lead to a mess.
Yeah.
Because a person can say, I was thinking, right?
Like, the arbiter comes and tells you that, no, this is too difficult. Too difficult and too subjective. And then there will be too many complaints.
We understand, of course, that when Hikaru is down a queen and he has perpetual bishop e3 to f2, that he's not thinking about, you know, like anything else. He's just trying to stall the clock out. We understand this.
Yeah.
But you would have to take this on a case-by-case basis because, let's say it's a 4-against-3 rook end game, right? Some people would just agree to, or 3-against-2 or 2-against-1 rook end game. Some people would just agree to a draw. Some people would play it out, and you can't call this stalling. This could just be playing it out, right?
Yeah.
So there's different types of positions, and it would be a bit too, like, do you really want someone in the middle of the match debating with the players, like, is this stalling or is this playing chess?
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's very difficult to actually include these type of rules. It just pretty much reminds me of NFL. Football. I don't know if you're watching, but there is this rule that if you have the ball, or of course, I don't know the exact specifics, but basically you can round down the clock the last 2 minutes. So if you have mm-hmm. the ball and you're like 1 point up, then you enter the final 2 minutes, 2 minutes of the match, actually the match is over pretty much because you can round down mm-hmm. the clock and nobody even cares. The opponents just walk off the field and everybody knows that the game is over once you have that opportunity. So
I think that athletes just play within the rules, right? They
yeah
you tell them the rules, they play the game, and they don't really care. It's like a chess player thinking this is unfair is the same way a chess player would think that being flagged when you're up a queen is unfair, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay, it doesn't feel good, but it happens, it's part of the rules. Or some players might think stalemate is an unfair rule, right? I've seen chess players argue that stalemate shouldn't be a draw, but
Nigel Short, yeah?
Nigel had this idea. I mean, it's logical, right? Stalemate is like a complete domination of your opponent, so why is it a draw? But that's just the rules of chess.
No. A lot of things actually have happened this past week. The Speed Chess Championship, that was a lot of fun. Obviously, the World Cup. I don't know if you were watching. I know you're not watching.
Yeah, I did watch.
You did watch
I watched the final.
Really? That was a good match, actually. That was a really good match.
Yeah.
Funny enough, it was like 2-0. And I'm actually in training camp right now with my university students. and the game started at like 9, and I told them, yeah, we'll start training camp after the match is over. Obviously, you guys can watch it. And I left with 10 minutes to go or something like that, 15 minutes to go before the end of regulation time, and it was 2-0 for Argentina. I was like, okay, this match is over. And then I got to the training room, and it was 2-2. And the guy was the guys were like going crazy about what has happened in the last 10 minutes while I was driving. So I was like, holy smokes, France actually made it.
It was a great match. Yeah. I mean, it was I guess one of the like all-time classic finals.
For sure.
But the funny thing is, it exactly mirrored, or like the other way around, because it happened first, of course. But the Hikaru Magnus match exactly mirrored that. Hikaru is leading throughout the match. Then, like, right at the end, Magnus equalizes it, and Hikaru still pulls through and wins, just like Argentina leading 2-0, France scoring two points very, very quickly.
Yep.
And then Argentina pulling it out in the end.
Yeah. And they scored again, like, and then they got equalized again in extra time.
It's funny how those matches mirrored each other on the same day. It's I mean, I don't, you know, subscribe to conspiracy theories, but I have some questions for Danny. I just want to say.
Yeah, we definitely gotta get Danny on the pod. That was good. No, that was a fun one for sure. And speaking of Danny and chess.com, I mean, I was saying that a lot of things have happened in the world, but especially in the world of chess. Finally, the acquisition, Play Magnus, was bought by chess.com. I think it's official. They made it official on the 16th. They just announced it today. We're recording this on Wednesday, the 21st, actually immediately after the announcement. Now, the first question is obviously whether this resembles...
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
A monopoly, or is this a good thing for chess? This is the big debate that I've seen in the chats and pretty much everywhere. Is chess.com getting too big, or is this a good thing that will actually help chess players and chess fans and just help grow the game? What do you think?
Well, that's a very good question. This depends entirely on chess.com at this point. Generally speaking, it shouldn't have come to this, that one chess company rose above all others. I mean, okay, monopolies tend to occur in every field, but still, it's not ideal.
We still have chess.
It's not that, I mean, I think chess.com is a good company.
It's a great company.
It's just that you should still have competition in some sphere. And obviously it's not their fault that they don't have competition. It actually started with Chess24 or the Play Magnus Group, because they started buying up companies. And this was before chess.com took over everything, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they bought Chessable. I remember seeing this meeting between Magnus and John Bartholomew. It was in Vikings Day. I forget which year it was. But this was like the start of Play Magnus Group starting to acquire all these smaller chess companies, which actually getting Chessable was a great business decision from their point of view, because Chessable is a hugely profitable company.
And
successful. That Chess24 is not, right?
Yeah, no, they're disruptors for sure, Chessable.
Yeah, Chessable is great. I mean, they make great content. They have a good team, I think. They were the only thing at some point like holding up the Play Magnus group, because Chess24 itself was hemorrhaging money, right?
Yeah.
They were getting very big investments from private investors, but they, I don't know, like the business model wasn't working out for them. But yeah, now chess.com has everything, I think.
Well, there's still Lichess, right? So in terms of at least places where you can play chess, they still have pretty stiff, if you want to call it like that, competition. I don't know if they're still focused necessarily on them being known as the place where you play chess, even though they probably are, but they're also putting a lot of their resources into entertainment, the entertainment side of things. But obviously, again, you still have Lichess where anybody can play. One thing about Chess24 is that I don't think anybody was actually playing on Chess24.
Yeah, like that was Chess24's big issue. Is their play zone was not good. I don't know why they never created a good place to play chess.
Maybe they were just too late.
No. Their problem was the interface was terrible, and they never got it programmed again, because I guess it's a pain in the ass to. I mean, their site was built.
Yeah.
When was it? Because it was before Magnus got involved. Mm-hmm. It was this guy Enrique, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I forget which year it was. Early 2010s.
I think so. I think so. I think 2011, 2012, something like that.
I think at some point they scrapped their team, like programmers, and they couldn't like figure out a way to make it good after that.
But this was one of the big problems that chess.com actually had also at some point. Their play zone was pretty slow. The famous stuck in the mud by Magnus, right? The pieces feel like they're stuck in the mud. But I think they took this big project of updating everything, and it took them probably a lot of resources and a lot of headaches to actually make it smooth. Which they did.
Yeah.
And then obviously. Yeah.
Now it's quite enjoyable to play on chess.com.
Yeah.
I mean, the interface is nice.
Best experience.
Lichess as well. It's a nice interface. But when we talk about competition, I mean, like chess.com is a place where Magnus plays, where Hikaru plays, where all the streamers have. One of the great things I think chess.com did, one of the very smart things, is they supported all these small independent streamers before they were huge, right?
At the beginning, 2016, and, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and now everyone has a chess.com logo. They have all the best players playing on their site. They have the big money tournaments. And if we look at like users of Lichess versus chess.com, will there be a comparison? Like, does Lichess have millions of people playing at the same time
No. The difference is pretty significant, and I think you're very much right about it. They focused on the entertainment side of it, and they basically attached their branding to the entertainment side of chess early on, before it caught on. And
yeah,
and
they made some very smart business decisions, for sure.
That was a good business decision. Yeah. No, I mean.
Oh, there is one more. I just got reminded of this because I was thinking, who is the one player who doesn't really play on chess.com that much? And then I thought, oh, it's Alireza, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's this other site called
Immortal.
Look it up again. Yeah.
The Immortal Game, yeah?
The Immortal Game is the web.
Yeah.
Whoa. Or it's, yeah, just Immortal Game, not the, yeah. I mean, it's still like early days for them. They're an interesting project. I didn't like fully understand it. I met the guys who started it. And it's like chess, but kind of gamified in a different way, right? So you can like collect stuff,
mm-hmm.
NFTs. Anyway, I don't want to like do an ad for them, but there is some, I guess some small competition, but still, yeah, chess.com really has a grip on the market. It's a really big grip.
No, and again, from my perspective, I think it's a good thing. I'm just trying to compare it to other sports, and I can think of MMA, for example, and you have the UFC, and everybody knows who the UFC is, and they were the ones by pretty much having the whole market on a tight grip. They were the ones that were able to penetrate these big platforms, yeah, the ESPN and things of that nature. So I think if we want to chess, if we want chess to be ever on ESPN, we need a big mover, and it does seem like chess.com right now position themselves to be the mover. So I kind of like it.
That's the hope.
I kind of like it.
I think we'll see. I think it's too early to say because it depends on their management and how they do with it. I think it's just too early to say.
Yeah.
I did notice something interesting which Magnus said, which is kind of related, I guess. He said that he thinks, or even that he hopes, that classical chess will be phased out.
When it comes to regular chess, I feel that classical probably will be sort of phased out a little bit, at least at the top level. At least that's what I think sort of should happen.
In favor of shorter time controls. And I was a bit surprised he said that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he said that actually today, just before we went live with Danny. He was speaking about it, and he did mention the fact that he hopes to see that being phased out. I don't think he hopes that classical chess is going to be phased out. I think he sees that as a natural movement of the market. And he's obviously a believer in the market. He wants to make chess exciting, or at least this is what I feel he's getting positioned to do and to push. And I think through that lens, it feels like he not necessarily once again wants to see classical chess being phased out, but he believes that the natural progression is for it to be phased out. What do I think about it? I think that's where FIDE comes into play. I think FIDE definitely needs to continue bringing the big classical events on the grand stage, and they still have a hugely important role in it. They're a bit slow moving, so obviously that's always been their problem, but I still think that they have something to give, and I still think they have a product to give to the world of chess. At the same time, I do see, and I think we've covered this quite a few times on the pod, it just feels like there's so many more Rapid and Blitz tournaments nowadays, right? 2700s, 2650s, they don't have opportunities anymore, or at least I don't see as many opportunities as they used to be in the world of chess for those type of players. And that means that, you know, also the top competitions most likely will be created for entertainment. And what brings entertainment and what brings the numbers is controversial figures, very strong players, and very exciting, fast-paced chess. So I think this is what we're most likely going to see in the future.
Yeah, no, of course, people want to see the Rapid and Blitz. I mean, it's the most fun to watch. It's also the most fun to play. I mean, I can say that as well. Like, you don't have to prepare as much. It's not as intense, right? You're not playing one game, everything riding on one game for 6 hours a day. I understand why Magnus doesn't want to play that as much as Rapid and Blitz. And I also have to say I feel the same, right? It's just more fun to play fast time controls. On the other hand, like, we're going to lose a great great part of chess if classical chess is completely phased out.
I don't think it will be completely phased out. Again, I still want
it's moving in that direction.
You think so? You actually think that is going to be completely phased out? I mean, we're already
talking about chess.com as a monopoly already. We're like, they don't focus on classical chess almost at all. It's all rapid and blitz. They I guess sponsor the, what was the Isle of Man?
Isle of Man and the Grand Suisse.
Well, Isle of Man became Grand Suisse. Now the Grand Suisse.
Yeah.
Is going out, right?
But they also sponsored the candidates. They also sponsored the World Championship match.
Well, I think that they provided commentary.
Correct.
I don't remember the full.
We're speculating exactly on the details right now. But
I don't think that they gave like money to the candidates. It's just that the production is a hugely expensive thing. And I think they provided that free for the candidates for FIDE to use. Speaking of FIDE, of course, they have the infrastructure, which is very valuable. The candidates, the World Cycle, the World Championship match, the World Rapid and Blitz Championships. But in terms of classical tournaments, it's right now being kind of maintained by FIDE, by some FIDE events, and by the St. Louis Chess Club that hosts a few classical events a year. The Singfield Cup, Bucharest,
and that's it.
The U.S. Championship, and that's it.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, also the Grand Chess Tour is I mean, only two events are classical, and three of them are rapid and blitz. So obviously, the trend is towards more rapid and blitz as well.
What we're left with is a bunch of like assorted randomly organized events by different people, and everything else. All the money goes towards rapid and blitz.
That's
the trend. It might pan out exactly as Magnus said, that classical chess will be phased out, and maybe he has no interest in it because he did bow out of playing the World Championship match, which he was entitled to play, right? He could have played the match and most likely kept his title for at least another year, but he moved himself out of that cycle. Maybe that's what he wants, to see classical chess sort of phased out as well. But I think we're going to see a mix.
I think we're going to get a huge answer after the match between Ding and Nepo. If the attention and the publicity and everything that comes along with the World Championship match feels the same, then probably classical chess continues to have a future. If it's a tenth of what the Magnus versus whoever match would be, then, we will get a pretty clear answer that classical chess is slowly dying, I guess.
So let me put it this way. The World Championship at its peak, I think our viewership.
Yeah.
When I was commentating on it, right?
Yeah.
Game six, like at the highest point of game six on Twitch, I think, was around 140,000 mm-hmm. concurrent viewers.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was a bit more than that.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
That was big. that was only on Twitch. Yeah, I mean, YouTube probably had 100K also. Who knows?
I don't know if it was 100K, but YouTube had an amount. But let's just focus on Twitch because I'm just trying to compare it to the Magnus against Hikaru speech chess championship final,
mm-hmm.
which, like, when we compare the gravity of the World Championship match, which is a culmination of a year of events featuring all the players in the world, featuring millions of dollars in money, and the prestige of, you know, putting your name in the history books alongside people like Capablanca and Kasparov and Fischer.
Yeah.
And the speed chess championship, with all due respect, is like a 2 week long or 3 week long event with a handful of players, all, you know, top players in the world, but a handful of players, no qualification process, and rather limited money compared to other big top events. Like, it's a great event, but the gravity is very different.
Yeah.
And like 70,000 people were watching that final.
Yep.
It wasn't that different from most of the games of the World Championship. Like, many games, it was 80,000, 60,000 to 80,000 people watching.
Yep.
On Twitch.
Yep.
Of course, in the last year, a lot of extra tension in chess has been formed, right? Chess is a bit bigger in some ways. People like Levy have improved their viewership exponentially in the last year, right?
Yeah, but I mean, when was the... I wouldn't say 2022. You would think that they improved as much exponentially. I think 2020 was the big one, and then 2021 was the continuation of the big three booms that we had in 2020.
I think the
pandemic was not subsiding. Yes.
It depends on who it is, for sure. But for Levy, I think he actually like doubled his...
Levy, yes, yes, yes. But that's only one example, right? I think 2022 already things have not necessarily phased out, because I still think the trend is positive. But I think 2020, 2021 was when we were seeing people actually being at home, staying at home because of the pandemic, and actually watching chess. And that helped a lot.
Okay, but that lends itself to my point, which is that... if there wasn't even a quantitative increase in viewership across the board in chess, then the comparison between a speed chess championship final and a world championship final and seeing similar numbers on Twitch is very, very telling, I think.
Yeah. No,
it really shows that what people are interested in. It's not long classical games. It's rapid fire blitz games, one after the other, blitz and bullet. And of course the names matter. But in both cases, Magnus was involved.
I would say...
Of course, Hikaru is a bigger name than Jan due to his online presence, of course. But still, I was shocked by the viewership for that match. 70,000 or so people on Twitch concurrently.
Yeah. It was huge.
That's enormous. Like, it shows the level of interest. This was a relatively small event compared to other events. Like... I can tell you that Magnus and Hikaru both care much more about the World Championship, which is coming up, rather than the speed chess championship final.
Mm-hmm.
Magnus probably cares more about most of the tournaments that he will be playing next. Like, for players, this is a relatively small event compared to other ones, but the viewership was enormous. People are really, really interested in seeing it.
Yeah, no, and it was 70k on Twitch, and I think it was 40 or 50k on YouTube. So concurrently, it was more than 100k combined. That's huge, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's just I assume that that's just chess.com covering.
Yes. That's, you know, you don't worry about Hikaru's Twitch channel, which was probably humongous as well. Magnus was streaming it as well on his platforms, YouTube channel. Chess24 was streaming it as well with their own commentary team. So it was big.
Hundreds of thousands of people watching, right?
For sure.
Very, very big. Like, also the chess boxing event. Of course, I know that's different because it's streamers and they bring their own audience. But at some point we had like 400,000 people watching people who don't know how to play chess.
Yeah.
Like, they barely know how to move the pieces, and they have 400,000 people watching, which is more than any chess or chess-related event I've ever seen. Mm. Like, Dina wrote this. I think it was in jest, but nevertheless, she wrote that her match with Andrea was the most viewed chess match between two women in history.
That is true. That is actually true.
Which, it is sort of funny. I don't know if like people who like watching chess because they love chess will probably not be too amused by that. I'm sort of indifferent. Like, you know, if people like watching chess in whatever format, I think that's great. But it is also rather amusing when like this final is far more viewed than the World Championship last year.
No,
like the Dean Andrea chess boxing is far more viewed than the World Championship last year. It's pretty funny.
yeah. No, chess is changing, and it's moving fast. So definitely very intriguing and fun times, I would say, ahead. Now, there is a couple of opens, speaking of classical chess and classical events. A big one is Sanwei Siege. I was actually planning on playing. I was considering playing that. The problem was that we were finishing on the 12th with the chess boxing event, and we actually had to be there. And the tournament was starting on 13th. So I would have had to fly from LA to Spain, and they were not accepting buys. So in the end, I was like, okay, maybe I shouldn't play this. But Hans is playing. Hans is
he's doing well. He's
continuing his Spanish circuit, and he's definitely doing well. He didn't do very well in Llobregat. He started well at Llobregat. He started well, but then he lost a game, I think, against Tin Zhang Yao, from who is actually a very promising player from Singapore. We haven't had a lot of talents from Singapore, but this one is one of them, close to 2600. Mm-hmm. And now he's doing really well. I think he...
Well, actually, it just finished today, right?
No. There's one more game, one more round.
It's 10 rounds.
10 rounds, yeah, yeah.
Ah, okay. So he has a chance, a legitimate chance of winning the tournament because he's a half point out of first.
I think so, yeah. I think so. Okay. I think Alexenko started off just ridiculously hot, 7 out of 7. I'm not 100% sure how he did in the last couple.
He's 8.
So he drew his last two. Yeah, yeah. And Hans 7
won
and
his
half.
Last two. So he's 7.5.
And Tabata Bay?
No, Tabata Bay is 7, probably out of contention for first, along with Yu Yang Yi.
Tabata Bay is 7 out of 8, actually.
Sorry, what's that?
Tabata Bay is 7 out of 8.
Yeah. So probably out of contention for first place.
Not like out of 9,
I think.
Because he didn't play the first round. He got paired with an Israeli player. And he didn't play.
Wait, he has...
He only played 8 rounds. The first time, the first one, he lost by forfeit.
Oh, I understand.
He
oh,
got paired
okay.
with an Israeli player, and he couldn't play because of the situation.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I spoke to these guys at some point, and I like won't say too much, but it is very sad. Because, of course, they want to play... chess, right? Generally.
Yeah.
But they're not able to when in this case. It's not, you know, it's not out of their desire, I don't think, that they're forfeiting games.
No, of course not. And partially, probably that's why Ali Reza changed federations, yeah, and moved away, I would assume.
Probably one of, well, I think the other reason is that he does have very serious support from someone in France.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but also because of the fact that, I mean, if anybody from Israel gets really good and at some point challenges you in a direct match, you cannot play that match, right? It's just, unless you want to have huge problems at home.
It would be very dangerous.
It's a very sad, unfortunate situation, I have to say. I guess there's not a clear-cut answer to that.
Yeah.
Hans with a clear shot at potentially winning Siege, and I think he more or less established himself over 2700. Finally, he's been 2699 for the last like 3 tournaments or something like that, and finally he made it over 2700. So good job, congratulations to Hans.
Yeah, 2706.1
currently,
so
yeah, with a round to go.
Unless he loses, even if he loses tomorrow, he'll probably still be 2700.
Yeah.
But assuming he doesn't lose, he'll be between 2706 and 2710, something like that.
Impressive stuff. And I think, we'll talk about the lawsuit at some point. There were some things happening with the lawsuit. I think chess.com and Naka, and even Play Magnus and Magnus himself tried to file for dismissal. Yes, they filed for dismissal, I think. But still, that thing is moving pretty slow, so I don't think there's anything.
Yeah, it somehow lost the attention of the chess world because, and we spoke about this before, legal stuff, it's not very exciting, is it?
It's always going to move slow. Yeah.
It's not the sexiest thing to talk about.
So we don't have much in that regard. Actually, there was something recently, I think it just came out, a statement from FIDE, from the Fair Play chair, on their investigation of Magnus versus Niemann. And it says something along the lines of, well, actually, it doesn't say much. It says that the panel has been working very hard in the past few weeks, but the investigation is not yet completed. This is due to the complexity of the matter at hand, which requires the panel to search for and analyze all relevant evidence. Blah, 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 blah.
That's the most exciting news I've heard all day. Wow.
So basically said something, a statement about nothing. Okay. And just to top it off, I think they also announced that the CEO of Chessable just announced that there's going to be a lot of courses coming in the new year, and some very interesting names on the list of coaches, and one of them was you. You're actually going to have a Chessable course. Excited?
Yeah, I will.
Excited about
that? I was approached a few months ago. Yeah, no, it's I do want to do a good job with it. It's going to be an opening course. I won't like say the opening yet because I don't know if they want to.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Publicize that themselves, but it's an opening which I have a great deal of experience on, playing it for over a decade, on and off, of course, but still they came to me with the idea of an opening course and asked which openings, and I think they already had their mind on this one opening because mm-hmm. it's an opening which hasn't been covered yet by any Chessable course. So I hope it's good. I mean, I'm going to try to prepare it very meticulously, prepare the material meticulously, and hopefully do a good job of presenting it. Which, you know, I did an opening course in the past, which I wasn't super happy with the final result. I didn't feel like I was well prepared to cover it, and kind of just went into it, winged it. And the result was a little bit of a mess, you know. It still got some positive feedback, some negative feedback, but I'm hoping to do a much better job with this one. And so far I've started with it, but I haven't, it's still a work in progress. It's not going to be completed, you know, anytime very soon.
Mm-hmm.
My hope is that by March it will be complete.
March, wow, that's, yeah.
Well, my timeline.
Very confident timeline.
That's my hope. Because
they're not easy. I can tell you that much. They're not easy. They.
Yeah.
They require a lot of work.
I know. That's just my hope, because I do have a lot of tournaments going. If I had no tournaments going on, it would be quite easy to set out like 2 weeks just to get everything. Because like the analysis part is rather easy.
Yeah, and I would assume most of it is already done, or at least you have the right direction.
Yeah, most of that is pretty much clear cut for me. The exposition, explanation, and the way of organizing the material is the most time-consuming part, and probably the most difficult part will be the presentation of it, because I know how difficult it is to speak in front of a camera, especially alone, for many hours. But that's the only way to do it. You at some point have to do that. But it will also, that will be the less time-consuming part, because at that point all the material is ready and you just need to get in front of a camera and speak for several hours a day and get it done. But yeah, I'm a little bit nervous. I hope that the final product will be good.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it, and I'm sure it's going to be great. We'll talk about that more as the final product is getting close to being finalized. But yeah, well, Fabi, I almost forgot. You have a couple of world championships coming up. World Rapid and Blitz, and leaving for Kazakhstan in a couple of days. Or are you leaving actually tomorrow? When are you going?
I'm leaving tomorrow.
Okay.
And it starts a few days after. And yeah, it'll be it's going to be very strong. It'll be very interesting. Last year, I got rather close to making a serious push for first. You know, we tied on score with Magnus, with Jan, and with the eventual winner, Norderbeck.
Abdusatarov, yeah.
But they eliminated Magnus and I. So we were like third, fourth, and Jan and
based on tie breaks.
Abdusatarov played based on the, I guess it was Sonnenborn-Berger, and we got left out in the dirt, and the two finalists were Jan, and I thought that he would win the playoff. I thought he would be a favorite, but Abdusatarov is extremely extremely good in rapid. Like I saw he also this Gashima Memorial, right, which is happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
Gashima Memorial just started, and I think he's leading.
Mm-hmm. He's
like
good.
7 out of 9.
He's
in,
really
in
good.
Rapid.
He's really good, and he's getting very very good in classical as well. I think he's he passed 2700, so he's around 2720. Yeah, he's definitely getting good. Speaking of Abdusatarov, he's not playing the rapid. He's not defending.
Yeah. I don't know what reason. I guess he has some personal reason, but it's strange.
Very strange.
Because you'd think a player who has won it would be excited to return. I mean, what is there to lose? But maybe he has something going on.
Well, actually, speaking of that, do they have any Uzbek players participating, or is this just like I see some Uzbek players. Sindarov is playing, so it's definitely not a country thing. Yakubov is playing. Yeah, actually, most.
No, I don't think it's a.
It's just him.
It has nothing
yeah?
to do with the country.
It's just
it's
him.
Probably a personal reason.
Hmm.
I would guess, but yeah. I don't know. Can only speculate.
No, that's going to be a super fun one. I'm definitely going to be following it. Not traveling anywhere for Christmas. It was either that, staying at home, or coming to Kazakhstan. In the end, decided to stay at home. But that should be a very fun one. And pretty much everybody's playing. Magnus is playing, Richard Laporte, Nakamura, Duda, MVL, Nepo, Grishuk, yourself, everybody. Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically everyone except, I guess, Ali Reza, right?
Ali Reza is not playing. Yeah, never mind. I forgot about
Richard,
that.
Ali Reza. Yeah, I don't know why, but he's... He like had this huge successful run in the summer and then decided basically to take a long hiatus from chess.
What's up with that? He did that. Actually, he's been doing that for the last couple of years, right?
Well, he did that before the candidates.
Yeah.
Like he had this very success. It's a pattern, right? I mean, he wins the Grand Swiss in 2021. He gains a ton of rating in the European Team Championship.
Yep.
And then he doesn't play for like 6 months. And then he plays as candidates, has a relatively poor result. Then he has a very successful summer. He wins the Singfield Cup, wins the Rapid and Blitz in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And then he disappears. It's a weird pattern. Normally, I would think he would be very eager to carry on with that momentum. Like, why wouldn't you?
Do you have any inside info as to why he's doing
this? No, not at all. I just think that he and his team, which includes his family, I think his father has a pretty significant role in the direction of his career.
Mm.
And I think they have this idea that, yeah, you sit and you do the work. And he probably wants to make a very serious push for world champion. That's
mm-hmm.
my guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's the right approach, though, because, you know, it's an unusual one.
Usually
players,
unusual.
They work a lot, but they incorporate some tournaments in the mix to get that that practice in so you don't get it stale. So I don't know. We'll see. But it definitely feels like a strategy that they're taking.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think more or less that covers a lot of ground. Very excited about the World Rapid and Blitz. So very excited about the future of chess. Very excited to see how the future of chess is going to pan out, but it definitely looks promising. And yeah, I mean, safe trip to Kazakhstan.
Thank you.
We'll talk after Christmas. Hopefully it's going to be a successful Christmas for you. couple of world championship titles at stake. So that's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Follow. And yeah, happy if we're not going to hear from you. Happy New Year's. We'll see you in 2023. And we'll see everybody else in 2023, guys. Stay tuned to the channel. We have a lot of content coming your way, a lot of fun content. And we're not going anywhere. The podcast will be growing. So see you guys next week and after that in 2023. Cheers.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. LeafHome.com/water.